We mentioned the drop in that approval rating in the connection to the Middle East, and here it is. On foreign policy, 33% approve of Joe Biden's job performance. Just in September, we asked the same question, and it was 41-53.
These numbers surprised our own pollsters, Steve, with one saying he cannot remember a time when a foreign entanglement that didn't involve U.S. troops had the capacity to transform the electorate, and that's not the case in this poll.
Gentlemen, your attention, please.
Just a catching strays over here.
You're in for a hell of a show.
Keep the faith, hold the line, and own the libs.
It's time for our main event.
Fellas, that got me revved up. Yeah. That was the first time we used a new promo.
Great new intro.
Hell yeah.
I love it, and it looked very good in video.
Oh my goodness, you handsome devils.
Again, if you have not yet, subscribe to YouTube, because in video, this show is like twice as fun.
Man, I literally, that's the first time I got it in like the full...
It's hype.
Surround.
Yeah, it's hype.
Walking up, enjoying ourselves, as one does.
Just some friends. Just some brotherhood.
Just friends being friends. Well, I think we've officially entered the holiday season.
Absolutely.
Don't you think?
Yeah.
Well, I mean, look, everybody else has entered the holiday season. I don't know about you, but it took me about 8 minutes to get into the office today.
Yeah, I know. Yeah, it was hilarious how few people are in town.
Yeah, but we're hard workers.
Well, that's it. Well,
we never give up. That's the thing.
Most of us are hard workers.
Well, yeah, we don't talk about
Ashbrook,
that.
Ashbrook, you know, you still count even though you...
Unbelievable.
Smug, you showed up after lunch. You're going to leave before dinner.
he woke up at 10:30 this morning, and he found out the Broncos won last night.
Yeah. You son of a bitch. And that's a double.
We should start with that, because
we should.
It was a great game. It was another.
You don't have any idea.
I do. So yet again, the Vikings blew it right at the end. It's like 3 minutes, they're up. Oh, yeah, it's a wrap, guys. We're playing against the worst team in the league. And the Broncos still won. I mean, I guess there's a new worst team in the league.
Oh, my God. I have so little. And you just come at me with that right out of the chute?
I mean, it's the thing.
Did you watch it down?
I did. It was a terrific game. The Vikings played really bad. I mean, I get that your QB's out.
What do you
mean?
They just dominated.
Your receiver's out.
You can come away with a lot of interpretations of that game. Vikings played really bad.
They did.
It's not one of them.
It's the truth. And people online were like, oh, wow, someone's finally cracked the code on the Broncos. You just keep running the ball. How'd that work out? How did that work out?
Finally cracked the code on the Broncos.
People have been trying to figure them out.
Yeah.
I think it was...
Can't be done.
I think it was mostly self-inflicted by the Vikes with
of
the turnovers.
Of course it is. It's the way we roll.
And you know, I was watching the game because, what was it, like the third or fourth play, the Vikings QB gets hit, fumbles the ball, and I texted you laughing.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Very
kind. I was watching. It was hilarious.
It looked like a crime was committed on the field.
And who is that QB that you have? He
Dobbs.
Doesn't have eyebrows. Dude's like E.T.
Oh, come on.
This is where you're
You've
going
got
with this?
E.T. throwing the football and you thought you could win? Not happening, dude.
E.T., go
he
home.
Has, he has no eyebrows. He has no eyebrows. I was like, this guy, where did they find him? Did they like grow him in a tank?
Oh, my God.
No one's heard of this guy.
Big sports fan, huh? Big sports fan.
It takes real balls to have Russell Wilson as your quarterback and be throwing shade at other teams.
Yeah, he's a $200 million man.
God. Well, I mean, look, I imagine that everybody's getting ready for their Thanksgivings, and there's family involved and all that. Everybody, we're good. There's a touch of anxiety when it comes to this day and age when you're dealing with trying to accommodate the wishes of everybody.
Well, I'm like a Boy Scout, you know, like you have to prepare. And so we spent last weekend, you know, getting everything together for all the sides and everything, you know, and you're getting like the tinfoil.
So you got them all sitting in the fridge already?
Right. Like all that's ready to go. Like the turkey's
a week out,
starting to thaw. Well, it takes like 3.5 days for the turkey to thaw properly. So you can get the innards and the gizzards out there. And it's not frozen to the inside of the turkey. So we did that this weekend so like we could prepare because my wife's, you know, family gets in town.
Listen to Julia Child over here.
Yeah. Right? Well, I mean, he spends a lot of time getting his feast together.
I enjoy cooking Thanksgiving because it's like you can have your beverage, you have your domain, and other things are hopefully handled.
And it's a good meal. It's a good meal.
It is.
It is a good meal. I mean, look, Thanksgiving's unique. We do have the Thanksgiving spectacular to look forward to. You'll get that.
Annual tradition.
And you're going to get it 5 a.m. Thursday morning.
You will get it. You can play it for all of your family. Or just get up early and maybe stick it in your earbuds while you're getting
Get inspired.
Because that's what Smug does. Smug wakes up an hour early on Thanksgiving so that he can make sure he's got lots of right-wing shit to say.
That's it. I wake up in darkness every year. And think of all the right-wing shit I'm going to carpet bomb the dinner table with.
Yeah.
It's the right thing to do. Well, we're going to set the table here a little bit for your politics before we get all to that on Thursday. But before we do that, I think we have a Black Friday merch sale coming up on Friday.
Wow.
We do. It's a promo code Black Friday for 25% off everything in the store through Friday.
Is that right?
That's right.
So you can get all your merch.
Get your merch. Get your some gifts for people. And
stocking stuffers.
All of it. All of it.
And it runs Tuesday through Friday. So like when folks are listening to this, it's already live.
Yeah.
Did you guys know that Ashbrook had a lateral lisp as a kid?
Really?
I did.
Really?
My friend's name was Jeff Reisinger. And my cousins never let me hear the end of it.
I would never imagine from the voice. It's like...
I know. Well, it's kind of what happens when people have to overcome it. They just... Their diction...
Yeah, the elocution is like flawless now.
Yeah. But it started with stocking stuffers.
Tongue is too big for my mouth.
Oh, boy. Just leave that. Just leave that. Is that right? Anyway, you get some merch, 25% off. You get the code Black Friday. You put it into the website. You get stuff. Okay, that's the end of that. Did we see at the end of last week, I mean, we had Nikki Haley on the program, and she had some, as we covered Thursday, some, shall we say, controversial policy positions as it relates to social media and anonymous accounts. And it turns out there are some folks in Iowa that took exception to this. And as Smug, they begged for your freedom.
Yeah, can we get that? Is that graphic available for it? So essentially what was going on.
There it is.
Yeah.
So there were a grassroots movement that's happening across the country. And folks showed up dressed. For those who are only listening, these are folks who are like in a prison cell outside the Nikki Haley event. They're wearing like orange jumpsuits with a free Smug signs, right? And that's the thing, is like across the country you're seeing patriots rise up because they're very concerned. and like I've said, I've given some thoughts to this. I was thinking, you know, kind of like how Grover's got the taxpayer protection pledge, having like the Smug pledge where every candidate says, you know, if elected president, day one, executive order, that Smug will remain, you know, safe and free at all times.
On the flip side, though, if you are pro jailing Smug, think of how funny it would look, him getting waterboarded in sunglasses.
And that's maybe the Duncan pledge.
Yeah,
that you could sign
waterboard Smug.
And you could waterboard Smug.
Yeah, like a dunk tank.
Yeah, only like with the towels and like a slanted board.
Yeah,
and see, that's the thing, is you either stand with the Patriots or you stand against me. Like that's the line in the sand. And I think, you know, and you're going to start seeing this, I think, across the country, because this is a very important to conservatives.
Yeah,
that I remain, you know, outside of Gitmo. I think that's an important concern.
I think we need to fight for it to be in the party platform
at
the convention.
100%. It should be.
Just Smug's freedom just the...
Freedom and safety. Freedom and safety.
Well, because, I mean, look, the larger principle at stake here is our freedom, shall we say, of anonymously trolling otherwise important people.
Yeah.
Right?
And I think... So,
and that's really where we're setting it in stone here. That's American as apple pie.
I'm 100% for that.
Yeah.
And I think being able to anonymously troll people in power is like a bedrock principle of our democracy.
Well, it's kind of, you could make a pretty good First Amendment case for it.
Absolutely. I'm just saying, in this one case of Comfortably Smug, waterboard him in sunglasses, put it on national television, you could pay-per-view that thing. I think you'd make a lot of money.
Is there any way that we could set up some kind of a lotto drive or something where we could raise money to get you waterboarded?
I think every journo in this town would pay money to watch
it. And see, that tells you the folks lined up against
it. And the power you have.
It's the journalists. It's the Uniparty. These are the only folks against me. Patriots stand with me.
Don't you think we could do it on camera? I mean, Michael Duncan is a whiz with the internet. he could probably set it up where somebody presses a button on their laptop and then smoke falls
again
into a dunk tank.
The voice of the Patriots. This is the price that's paid. It's like
Wolf probably knows how to execute such a maneuver.
It's like I tweeted out that, like, in the end, it's you they're after. I'm just standing in the way.
I think
that's the thing.
I think with Wolf's background, he could probably be in charge of the extraordinary rendition.
we could just
put the burlap sack over his head and throw him in the back of a cargo
van.
It's
enhanced interrogation.
And then, bring him here in studio, waterboard him for charity.
The only thing I ask is I just want a towel hole with just one jug pour, and then I'm out, and then you guys can do whatever. Waterboard, I just want the one jug.
Well, where's the transportation department? Right, because I know Pete knows how to waterboard.
Oh, for sure, he could probably give us
that guy
tips.
Was running CIA black sites.
Yeah, I've only watched Zero Dark 30.
Like, I'll show up. I'll waterboard anytime.
Hell yeah.
Do you still think that Pete is just like a complete lie? Like,
yes,
everything
dude,
about
he
him.
He is a manufactured lie. The guy is a walking psyop. He is deep state through and through. But like behind the you can see that like fake smile behind those eyes is a very dark man. Like, he's done horrific shit for the CIA. I guarantee it.
Okay, well, I mean, look, it's a take a take. All right, let's get into this. So you saw the poll at the top, which NBC was shocked to find out that this president had a 33% approval rating. On this, his birthday, what is he, like 117 years old now? No, literally, I don't. How old a man is he? 81.
Yeah, he's 81, and this will be the least celebrated birthday any president has ever had.
That's the truth.
They don't want anybody to know it's his birthday.
Right.
He's 81. He might as well. I had a grandmother that lived to 103, far more psychologically attuned than this guy.
And that's the thing, is like, it's one thing for him to be 81. It's another for him to be in the state that he's in, because like his actual age of like where his mind and body are is way beyond 81.
Do you guys see that? Do you see the B-roll of him at that San Francisco stuff where he was just sitting out in the... Like, he's sitting out and just kind of by himself, and they film him, and he's like...
I mean, that's the thing. I mean, this is the leader of the free world. And, like, his staff, like we've discussed on the show, I think it was last week, his staff doesn't trust him to let him be in front of a microphone without trying to prepare some statements. Because even when he has prepared statements, he's going to blow it. You know, like, his staff doesn't trust him. Like, this guy's going to ruin it. That's why they're not running a real campaign. They're going to do the basement playbook all over again.
Yeah.
It's really a shining city on a hill, isn't it, fellas?
Yeah.
As this really embark upon these holiday seasons,
it is.
Hope, you know, like fellowship.
Thousand points of light.
And so, like, these are some really good points that are in the document here. It says, Bloomberg News Morning Consult survey this month found voters in 7 swing states more likely to associate old age with Biden than any other topic.
Well, I don't know at this point how you could associate anything else. What are you going to do? Like the Inflation Reduction Act?
Yeah, Bidenomics.
No, I mean, Bidenomics. Yeah. What else? I mean... The chaos in the Middle East, Afghanistan, Ukraine.
Well, and
old age might be the best thing.
That's the thing is, like, he has no, like, you know, signature accomplishment in this first term that he wants to be associated with. Like, as we discussed on the show last week, he doesn't even like being associated with Bidenomics, because he's like, everyone feels like the economy sucks and you guys want to like tie my name to it. Like, I may be old and feeble, but even I know that's a bad idea.
Well, if you look at the polling, and in particular, I'm thinking about the NBC poll that, you know, that dropped over the weekend, and, you know, what we played here at the beginning of the show, on things like foreign policy, he's actually eroding on both sides of the ledger, right? It's like Republicans who think he's equivocated too much, and we've sort of palled around with Iran, and that sort of invited Hamas and all of this chaos we're seeing in the Middle East. But then on the other side, you see like there's a significant chunk of the Democratic electorate, particularly young people, that are like, no, Hamas is good and Joe Biden is bad.
Yeah, I mean, that's the thing, that in today's world, how polarized we are, you could be a claymation stick figure who just spouts RNC talking points and get to 45, or DNC talking points. And like, you actually have to work deeply into your own base in order to get to low 30s.
Yeah.
Right.
I mean, you've got to, which, you know, I guess that brings us to the next topic, which they kind of hinted at the top of the show in those poll numbers, which is he hits new lows amongst the Israel-Hamas war. Because as we said last week, turns out Hamas is a constituency of the Democratic Party.
Oh, no.
Oh, my God.
I'm shocked.
Oh, my God. It's incredible. But, I mean, for real, like, there is a significant portion of the Democratic Party that looks at what happened in Israel on October 7 and has looked at the response and been like, how dare you?
Yeah. And this is, to me, this is genuinely, like, terrifying and disturbing. that I discussed with you gentlemen. I read this article that a journalist wrote about he went to an Israeli embassy and they showed 45 minutes to an hour of this is just GoPro footage that the terrorists themselves, Hamas people, recorded while they were in Israel just murdering innocent civilians.
Yeah.
And he wrote in detail of what he saw there, and it's just like the worst horrors that you could possibly fathom. And these people did it gleefully.
Yeah.
And then the response you see from the left in America is saying, oh, well, that's decolonization. You know, like we've seen how insidious this like the woke kind of critical race theory has just gotten its claws into universities and even institutions. And we have members of Congress who are tweeting, you know, from the river to the sea, where they've seen, like Holmes discussed on our previous episodes, the left now sees everything through this prism of like, you are either the oppressor or the oppressed.
It's intersectionality and basically Marxism.
Yes.
Like, I guess, modern Marxism, but the principles of Marxism, which is everybody is either an oppressor or the oppressed. More likely than not in the modern day, it has less to do with where you are in your lot in life, as classical Marxism did, is it so much as it is what you look
like. And it's also, it's the only way to cobble together a coalition that's so disparate.
Yeah.
Right?
Like the Queers for Palestine right, march, which is like...
You have to hold in your head things that yep. make no sense.
Two opposing ideas.
In order to have that sort of Marxist solidarity.
But the irony of all of this is that it's being perpetrated by foreign-born people who are here in universities,
right,
on university campuses, saying that I'm the colonizer because I grew up in Ohio and played Little League baseball.
Yeah.
They're from another country trying to lord over every one of us who's just trying to like make it in this world.
Yeah.
And somehow
we're
the colonizers.
I think it
goes, and they're not.
I think it goes even deeper. Like you see all this footage of like college students in New York who are pulling down these posters of like kids who have been kidnapped and are still missing in Israel. And they're pulling it down. And these are like, I mean, these are U.S.-born American students who've just been brainwashed, essentially, by the left into believing that, like, oh, yeah, actually, I stand with Hamas because that's what decolonization looks like. Like, this is a very serious problem. Like, the surprise that you see—
It also can't be reasoned with.
It can't be.
Like, we're now at a point where we're like, oh, let's understand it. Let's understand it and find out where they're getting this and hope to educate them a mm-hmm. little bit on it. It's like, nope. You're lost. It's a generation that's lost. They're self-selecting. It's largely geographic, but it's self-selecting and it's lost. And the only thing that can actually make a difference here is if we change law enforcement policies, immigration policies,
education
yep. policies. Yep. Like you can catch the next ones.
Yeah.
That's the best you can do. Because like this crew, I mean, what are you going to say to somebody who has the balls to roll up and pull down a poster of a kidnapped child?
And beyond that, to go on TikTok and be like, you know what? Bin Laden made some good points.
Oh, we got that next. I want to get to that in a second. But you're right. I mean, that, like, when we're dealing with that kind of thing, maybe, like, catastrophic world events change point of views. I don't know. I mean, you read, like, the old school, like, David Horowitzes of the world who were, like, radical leftists and became kind of right-wing extremists because they realized how wrong they were over a period of time. Like, maybe that can happen. But, like, I don't know, man. It feels like...
It's I mean, it is actual cult-like behavior. It's going to require deprogramming, and it's going to take a lot. And it starts at the universities because, like, the problem with education goes so deep. It's so horrific what's happened, and a lot of it happened during COVID. Like the New York Times put out this surprised article over the weekend where they're like, wow, turns out that keeping schools shut down really hurt kids in their learning.
Yeah.
Like this is a revelation and not like they were demonizing conservatives for years saying that we want to slaughter children, right?
Yeah.
The group who has the least negative income outcomes from in-person attending of classes, being in person, whether it's work or anything, but they are the group who is the least affected during that pandemic, and they were subjected to the harshest of regulation.
But it's going to require more than just deprogramming. I think it requires deportation. If you are here,
let's go
on the good graces of the American people, and you are supporting Hamas, and you're tearing down posters of these kids who are being held hostage, and you're chanting "Intifada, kill the Jews." You don't belong here.
No,
you
and there's no belong. Country that would put up with this except for the U.S.
We need to get another expert in here, Because remember when we had Pompeo in here and we were talked about, you know, the Confucius centers or whatever,
yeah,
all the Chinese influences happening in higher education. I've heard from multiple people about Qatari money flowing around a lot of institutions,
yep,
that I think is informing some of this anti-Israel sentiment in this country. And I think we have to root it out. Like, we need to root it out, and it needs to be removed from our country.
Look, man, in America, we like people who think differently than us. It enriches our entire culture to have people who come from different backgrounds and provide a different sort of angle on the way things ought to be.
I think as long as they're willing to be part of America, because that's the situation.
Exactly.
Here.
Right. But if you hate our country, if you hate the people who live here who happen to be Jewish, you don't belong.
Like, a refusal of assimilation is a significant part of the problem.
It's like the whole, you know, the snake poem thing that Donald Trump always cited back in 2016. It's like, we knew damn well you were a snake before we let you in. If people are like sympathizing with radical Islam, and like we're letting them attend our universities,
right,
why would we be surprised?
And we're letting them teach our universities. Like the amount of professors who have been like called out for, like, they teach courses to children at universities, and these are radical, insane people who, under their own name, would publish this stuff of like, well, you know, Hamas is just decolonizing.
Right.
All this insane anti-Semitic shit.
That is not cultural enrichment.
No, it is not.
At some point, it's just fucking evil.
Yep. It also just reminds you, you know, like in politics, when you're like trying to get attention and you're basically ramping up the rhetoric a little bit over time, and then all of a sudden everybody starts paying attention, they're like, Jesus, like, what the hell happened? It reminds me, like, higher education in that, I think it's just built a little bit over, like, well, let me say this thing.
Mm-hmm.
And then nobody fires them.
Yep.
And then they say, all right, well, I can go a little further. And nobody fires them. And then we can go a little further. Before you know it, like, all of a sudden you turn the camera on and it's like, holy shit, Hamas is teaching at Harvard.
That's the thing.
Right. You know what I mean?
Right.
Like, it's wild. It's a slow boiling frog.
Yeah, that's 100% it.
Right?
That's 100% it.
That's basically what's happened. So this leads to the next story because it's intertwined, which is this TikTok thing.
Yeah.
Fellas, so this is an Osama bin Laden letter.
Before you get to that, can you get me more bourbon
for
this segment?
No, I think you're going to need
it. I think if we're going to talk about Osama bin Laden, I'm going to need a little bit more.
Yeah, yeah, you're going to. So this is according to the Daily Mail. It's been written everywhere, but this is according to the Daily Mail. Terror chief's 9/11 justification wins support amongst pro-Palestine Americans who claim their, quote, eyes have been opened, unquote, after the Guardian linked to it. Okay, so this is a vile letter that was written by the warlord behind the 9/11 atrocities, has gone viral on TikTok, with users saying that reading it has led them to understanding why the horrific attacks of 9/11 were carried out. Osama bin Laden, who founded the terror group Al-Qaeda, with the aim of waging holy war in the Western world, wrote a letter to America in 2002 to defend the motivation behind his murderous attacks on the mainland America that killed thousands of innocent people. In a viral letter, bin Laden spews anti-American, anti-Semitic, and anti-Western viewpoints, citing one of the main reasons for 9/11 being the U.S. support for Israel.
Mm-hmm.
All right. So, I mean, look, longtime listeners of this program understand that I think this maybe goes for more than just me, but I was not a college Republican. I was not a particularly political human being. Came out here for a internship because my dad was like, what else is this guy going to do? He's going to like sell shoes or pump gas, but he's got to find some direction. And so I had an internship out here, and it happened like 3 weeks before 9/11. It was a seminal moment in my life because I saw not only the horror that was capable around the world, but I also saw Americans binding together in the first real way that, you know, you read about in like 1940s America in wartime, and that everybody was picking each other up and trying to, and it was like a seminal, it made me believe that I could be a part of something. And so I got into this line of work. My fear at the time that has now come to fruition was that there was going to be generations of Americans that didn't experience it firsthand at some level and wouldn't be able to particularly contextualize it in the manner that it was, right? It was an attack. It's a kind of like, you know, maybe how you view Pearl Harbor at some extent. Although, you know, those of us who grew up when we grew up, like, you have particular reverence for that too. So I can't really figure out exactly what's happened, but there's a generation of Zoomers that are so disconnected from that moment in time and what it meant to our country and what it meant to the world, that they would entertain this, let alone express sympathy for it. And there is a platform that we have allowed into our country, TikTok, that algorithmically serves it to them mm-hmm. on the regular. Like, what?
That's the thing. So we had seen this from the very beginning of the attack on Israel by Hamas. China, who controls TikTok and the algorithm, immediately, specifically, feeds pro-Hamas content to every American essentially under the age of 30. They just bombard them with any video that is like pro-Hamas and the woke decolonization bullshit. They just bombard them to feed them as much as possible, where this computer scientist was writing about how they were being served pro-Hamas content something like 50 to 60 times as much
unreal.
As anyone over like the age of 30, right? So these people, number one, China turns on a switch of where they're like, yes, they have a machine in place within the United States to sow discord, right? And this is a very important distinction, is when people say, oh, TikTok should be banned, I think the most important way to argue this is to unveil the insidiousness of it in terms of China doesn't allow Facebook, they don't allow Twitter, they don't allow Instagram, because they want to have their country completely controlled from any dangerous foreign influence, which means anyone who would disagree with the Chinese Communist Party. They don't have that kind of like same setup with the U.S., where right. we allow them to export whatever propaganda they want freely here in this country. And there's no reciprocity.
Yeah, back to the previous segment, we invited into our university some yep. of the greatest institutions in the world for higher learning, and we invite that propaganda onto our campuses.
Yep.
And they're like, we won't even allow it on our internet.
Yep. So China doesn't allow that domestic, like TikTok, there's a version of TikTok in China, and all it shows, I saw this really great documentary.
It's like they're building hospitals.
They're building hospitals. You see farmers with these like bountiful yields. Yeah. They're building bridges and stuff. It's just like essentially stuff to be like, hey, wow, China's a great country. Yeah. What do they serve in the U.S.? Wow, America's a horrible country.
Yeah.
Actually, Bin Laden was right. Here's this two-pager that he wrote, and all the kids are like, yeah, no, it makes a lot of sense.
Well, I think it's important to recognize also that what Bin Laden did in that letter and a lot of his communications to the West was propaganda in and of itself.
Mm-hmm.
Like, if you go back...
Because he was Western educated. Like, he actually understood
this. Well, not just Western educated. Yes, he was. But he also, if you go back and you look at the inventory of everything they took out of that compound in Abbottabad, right? In addition to the internet porn, that he had a huge stash of internet porn while he put his five wives in hijabs,
mm-hmm.
okay? He had a lot of Western books about military, about Americans' foreign policy, and all this sort of stuff, because what he wanted to be able to do was figure out the fissures in American thinking about their foreign policy and their politics and exploit those for his advantage.
Yeah.
Right? It's like...
And we give it, like Osama bin Laden could only be so lucky as to live in today's day and age.
Right. Oh,
yeah. Right? Where we just like show it.
Right.
He's like, I don't need to plan out flying planes into buildings. I just need to use TikTok.
Yeah. Which like we need to get really wise to this shit. And I know we joke around about it. And I know that, you know, we longstanding on this program have expressed exactly what we think should be made of TikTok, should ban TikTok.
Mm.
But like the larger propaganda piece, it's not a look. I understand being a free society and a free thought society and a democratic, you know, republic requires us, particularly with our constitutional principles, to not be China. And it's not like banning anything that you know expresses disappointment with our culture. Like, that's not it. What is it is when you create something with the express intent of trying to drive those fissures, that's an act of war.
And like, so,
how have we not come to that conclusion? That's what it is. It's no different than a coronavirus that sweeps around the world and tries to kill, you know, millions of people. It's no different than that. It's exactly the same. It's just a different way than flying planes into buildings.
And that's right. why I feel like the strong argument here is, you know, you'll have free speech absolutists who are like, oh, well, you can't ban TikTok because they deserve to have the right free speech. Then I believe in free speech in the sense that there should be reciprocity. Allow the free speech to happen in China with our companies And if they don't respect that, then we don't respect that here. If they won't allow Facebook and Twitter and Instagram in China because they're against free speech, well, guess what? There's reciprocity. This is not a one-way trade situation where we will take your goods and you will ban our goods, because that's not the way the world works. Mm. So that's the way I think that's the argument against it. I hope that's the way they'll finally get like members of Congress to open their eyes to this, because it's a question of reciprocity. You know, if you're worried that like, oh, well, you know, this could be considered, you know, anti-First Amendment. All right. Well, if China is not respecting our companies to be able to exist in their nation, we don't need to do it.
Does the First Amendment really apply to the Chinese military? I mean, are we required by law to let them say what it is that they want to say?
No, it applies to Americans.
Exactly.
Period.
It applies to Americans.
Yeah.
The Chinese military is by definition not American.
I heard Megyn Kelly make a point on
this. She was crushing it.
Yeah, that I thought was really, really well done. And again, we thank her always for having the opportunity to go on her show and her coming on ours, because I think it's a good discussion. But the point that she was making was, where are the parents?
Mm-hmm.
Where are your parents? If you're 20 years old, 22 years old, you know, your parents in all likelihood are, what, 40 or above? Close. I mean, there's exceptions, obviously. But they lived through this. They lived through 9/11. They understood that moment in time. Do you mean to tell me that they lived 20 years of their upbringing, were college educated, they were able to communicate in a very real way and understand and obtain, have intellectual interest in politics, and they have not formed an opinion on Osama bin Laden? They haven't. Like, what the fuck are you talking about? Like, it never came up? Anytime in your childhood? Like, are you not talking about this stuff? Like, think about this in terms of how you deal with your kid. And believe me, I got two kids that they want to talk about nothing of import at all. And they're young, so it's like it's a growing process. But at some point, you have an obligation to teach them values.
Mm-hmm.
And you have an obligation to teach them about the world and about things that they should be wary of.
I don't know, though, dude. I don't know.
They just don't do it? We just don't do it in this country anymore? Because if that's the case, if we are literally saying to ourselves that as parents in the United States of America that we don't have any obligation to teach our kids anything, then what?
All I'm saying is we got parents that are trying to change the gender of their children today. There are an awful lot of parents who would say, I don't know, maybe we had it coming.
Eh.
That's the thing is, in these TikTok videos,
you know what I mean?
A lot of them were like, you have middle-aged, left-wing white women who are like, turn on the camera, I'm going to say some insane shit.
Right. For attention.
We can't possibly be that far down the road. Like,
we are, and parents are like, you know what? I don't want to have to teach my kid values when I can just hand them an iPad and they shut up.
Oh.
Yeah. That is happening. And the kid's getting bombarded with TikTok. Right. That's what happens.
Right. And they actually kind of agree with Osama bin Laden, so it doesn't matter anyway.
Oh, my God.
Sick country.
It's unbelievable. Garbage culture, as you say.
We have a garbage culture. That is one of my pillars of what my belief structure is that our country has a garbage culture right now. Yeah.
You should get, all of you listeners, you should get like the off-the-record, ruthless prescription for how to fix society. We could never.
Duncan's got a great plan.
We could never put it on air, but all of us have got different
facets
of it.
I'm going to look directly into the camera. Someday I will have the courage to put it on.
And I've taken it upon myself to add a criminal justice piece of it.
You have.
Which I think is an addendum that should be interesting.
Yeah.
But you know something.
Fairly straightforward.
Involves a lot of corporal punishment.
You know something that the Biden administration and Biden's campaign notwithstanding, there are a lot of Democrats in our society who will not let their kids have TikTok. We live in a neighborhood where we're basically the only Republicans, but a lot of the other parents are like, our kids are not getting on TikTok because they're like, this is a Chinese military app.
They understand.
Exactly. Exactly. Yeah. People who you wouldn't agree with on anything in politics except this one subject. Yeah. Where we're not going to let the Chinese control everything that our kids see.
But the kids like it.
Yeah, let's get to that point, Holmes, because we joke about that, but that's a legitimate argument. And I hear it a lot from people on the right as well. Vivek Ramaswamy makes this point. Other folks who
because he met with Logan Paul.
Yeah. But we have to, I mean, let's address that. Let's address that as an argument being like it exists and therefore we must acquiesce to its existence and use it.
Because we like it. I mean,
it's an argument.
But
not saying it's the right argument.
When are we going to man up in this country and start making rules?
That's exactly what I'm saying.
Like, when are we going to start throwing criminals in fucking jail? Or start eliminating this nonsense that is absolutely perverting entire generation of Americans? Like, this is insane to me.
Yeah.
Like, we're all just pretending as though America is not in decline.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, we went through, think of what we've gone through just over the past 5 years, right? We had a summer where Democrats were free to burn cities across the United States in the name of defunding the police. Essentially, like, chaos now.
Which, by the way, I'm working on an interview on this. There's a new film that's out.
Hmm.
A new film that's out called The Fall of Minneapolis. I'm going to wait for an interview because I've got a request in that goes into detail about how this whole thing happened. You got to hear it. You can make your mind up. I'm not telling you which way, but you got to hear it. We have a sitting vice president
who advocated for a bail fund to get people out in Minneapolis who had committed crimes. And these are people who are in for assault, rape, serious crimes, who went out and committed more assaults, more rapes, murders. I mean, we went through this. The modern left, this is a cornerstone of their belief, essentially. It's just chaos, unfettered chaos.
Yeah.
And it's been bubbling for a very long time. And they have accomplished capture of universities, institutions across this country, where, like, the Justice Department will label concerned parents showing up to school board meetings domestic terrorists before they actually worry about people who are saying Bin Laden's the good guy.
Yeah.
We're so fucked.
No, it is. It's across the board. It's OnlyFans is empowering for women. You know what I mean? Like, a sick culture. We're in a sick, sick moment right now. Yeah.
We got to figure it out. We got to figure it out because it quite literally is the last bastion of actual freedom on earth. And if you don't figure that out, there's nobody else that has any hope whatsoever.
And you know, I think Duncan, you were the one who said this the other day, but 20 years ago, you would hear over and over again in politics, we are just one generation away from our country falling apart. Yeah. Were you the one making this
point? I said it out there the other day.
You said it the other day. And it's just one of those rhetorical points that 20 years ago would go in one ear and out the other.
We always sort of thought it was glib bullshit.
Kind of a Barry Goldwater, Ronald Reagan, like late 60s, early 70s answer to what was happening with the rising, late 60s protests and hippies and everything else.
But it is true. It's truer now today than it's ever been.
I never thought it was true. Like, I really thought that our culture was strong enough that we could survive anything. And that we shared values, all of us, living in this American experiment, that it just sort of, through osmosis, went to the next generation.
Agreed.
And if you watched the way everybody came together after 9/11, it validated
you
that.
You sort of thought that, right?
It validated it.
Mm-hmm.
I think that might have been the last moment where...
God, I hope not.
Where it was obvious what the reaction would be. You know, nobody expected people to show up on 9/12 and be like, well, maybe they had a point. It was like, let's go find these guys. That's why George W. Bush's speech on the pile of rubble to the firefighters was so moving. It's why the pitch in the World Series was so moving. It was like all of us together, I don't care what your politics is, we're firing back at this. And like, if that happened today, would you have any confidence that would be a united front?
And if you're a Zoomer who's listening to this and you're like, you didn't live through 9/11 and you have no idea what any of that is, Go to YouTube and know, after you watch, that where George W. Bush was standing on that rubble right after the towers fell, there was the chirping of beacons of hundreds of firefighters who were murdered, in addition to all the people who died into the tower as they tried to save Americans' lives.
Yep.
And today, removed by 20 years from that, it's hard to even fathom that happening in the United States, but it can happen again.
It can happen again.
We're sort of spoiled by this thing in our politics here that everything is sort of luxury beliefs, and so much like we don't actually have to have a real stake in it in the same way that so many countries do. But this stuff does matter.
Yep. Yeah. Well, I mean, look, if you're a sports fan, look at that 30 for 30, I think it is, the man in the red bandana.
Yeah.
About Wells Crowther, I think his name is.
The guy who was going up the stairs.
The guy who, I think he played lacrosse or something, and he was going up the stairs to save people one by one. And that was the American spirit at the time. Like, you need to suck that in. Think about that. And if you're a parent right now and your kid's 15 or 16 years old, show them that. It's a tough subject matter, but you got to show them.
Yeah.
They have to know. They have to understand. Because if you leave them to a point where a TikTok algorithm is making them think maybe Bin Laden had a point, you're a fucking failure.
Again, I want to remind folks of the point that for people under, this is in polling, it shows, people under the age of 25, the first source they go to for information, like if you're trying to figure out how do I build shelves, you know, most people listening to this program would go to Google, how do I build shelves? People under 25 go to TikTok first. That's their search engine. That's where they go for information, and the Chinese government is deciding what information they see.
All right, let's ban it. And by the way, the fact that there's no discussion of that after this is just unbelievable.
Mind-blowing.
I want to know from you, because I saw a lot of traction over the weekend on the new leader of Argentina.
Yes.
And there was... like, if you were to read the news, I think you might not quite get it. Because I saw a whole bunch of, like, Argentinian Donald Trump wins in an election. And then I started looking at it. It turns out he's, like, a libertarian. He's got, like,
yeah,
I don't know.
Well, so that was the thing that really struck me. And so, like, a lot of folks may not have been, well, I mean, you didn't really have much of a reason to be following this election much. But the way that the New York Times kind of introduces him to the public is, you know, they'll send out their notification or their headline. The first comes out and says, far right libertarian
right.
wins election in Argentina. Far right libertarian, that's a first.
But like far, but not just far right libertarian, which I saw that one, but like far right libertarian in the mold of Donald Trump.
Yeah.
And it's like, I don't think Donald Trump knows who Ludwig von Mises is.
But you know, but this is totally.
You know this guy,
totally. Dude, your Mises. Point is 100%.
And we will get to it. This guy is like that kind of libertarian.
You're right.
But isn't this the point that we've seen the people who cover the Republican Party
yeah.
in national politics in for journalism, that they're so much a zoo animal bystander that right. they're watching all of this unfold. They could never relate to any of it. And so they see like loud voices and this side of the other, and they're like, oh, well,
it's all the same thing.
That's the far right. And then these very conservative people who believe in like traditional conservative things are like, those are the moderates because they're not like screaming about something. And then you've got these people and they don't have any ideological spectrum.
No.
To speak from whatsoever. And then, so far right for them equals Donald Trump.
Right.
Never mind the fact that he's like maybe the most moderate Republican nominee that's ever been nominated in like modern history since like Teddy Roosevelt.
Mm-hmm.
Easily, in my view. If you look at his ideological profile and then match it up with a libertarian.
Right.
Oh, yeah, no, there's tons of libertarians that love like Medicare and Social Security and entitlement program expansion and all of that. Like,
yeah.
There's not a single libertarian thing that he does other than, I don't know, like not want to bomb every country in the world. And that's like what they've reduced it to.
Right.
And there is a very real reason for that. And Michael and I, we've gone back and forth on our view of how to fix this problem. But a major problem in our country is that newsrooms are full of left-wing Democrats. And I don't just mean reporters, because reporters are out there doing their best to try to gather.
Here we go. Yeah.
To try to gather the story. They're sure. getting
no buddies are like, here it is. Don't come up
here it
me.
Is, the 30-second rehearsal.
Here it is. Here it is.
Sorry.
They're trying to get a quote from a Republican. They're trying to get a quote from a Democrat. And they're trying to keep their sources.
They got conveyor belts.
Continuing to tell them stuff.
Right.
They're hearing from their editors, their left-wing Democrat editors. I want you to explain Republicans to me because I don't understand them, because my politics are the opposite of theirs. So therefore, your job is to go out and to explain Republicans to our readers. Nobody... half of this country does not need Republicans explained to them. They just want their point of view reflected in the news because they know that they have a valid view on the way things are in this country. And editors who are pushing reporters to explain Republicans are the problem.
Yeah,
they're the problem.
I think you're right.
And the solution, like, I think the solution is that you need more Republicans in leadership positions in newsrooms. Michael has a much more nuanced view on this, but I think that you have to have people in positions of authority inside of newsrooms who are actually voting for Republicans at the end of the day. I think it's the simplest solution. And then they can argue amongst themselves.
Can I, before you get to whatever you're, if you want to add anything to that, I think you're right. The best, I think, modern embodiment of what it is that you're talking about is when NBC had Hugh Hewitt on.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, Hugh did a great job.
And I don't know exactly, I mean, I know a little bit, I'm not going to betray confidences, but I just his presence in that discussion, I have to believe, had an impact on the questions and answers that were available. Because if you look back on like the 2016 primary stuff, when we opened it up to all those major newsrooms and they were like, all right, let's spend the next 30 minutes on abortion. Let's spend, after that, we'll spend it on climate change. And like, Republican primary voters didn't have anything that they cared about whatsoever. And if you looked at that NBC debate that they did, maybe one or two questions that slipped outside of Republican primary view. And I mean, this is, we've all been huge critics mm-hmm. of NBC and the media. The questions that they asked in that primary debate down in Miami were very relevant to Republican primary voters.
But
I have to believe that his just literal existence there on the stage did something.
Having Hugh, somebody with the intellectual heft of him from the conservative movement on stage, I think there's a gravitational pull to that.
Yeah.
Where it like, it gets them to not do the thing that you were saying, Ashbrook. And I mean, that's sort of my point on newsrooms is, I don't know if we need Republican editors. Yeah, that'd be great. But like, what we need is people who are intellectually curious.
What you need is like a dozen more Charles Krauthammers.
Just people, you know what I mean? People like who actually know the fucking difference between stuff. Yeah. And most of it, to Ashbrook's point, is it's just DNC talking points. This is right. This is left. And this is the square peg that I want to put in the round hole and say, this guy is Donald Trump in Argentina. So, and let's get back to
bring it back to the Argentina point. Is the comparison that they were making to Donald Trump just purely stylistic?
It was. If anything was stylistic, I mean, he's eccentric, but again, this guy's an actual libertarian. I'll read a little bit. This is from Insider. It says, libertarian outsider Javier Milei swept to victory in Argentina's presidential election Sunday, vowing to halt decades of economic decline in a country reeling from triple-digit inflation.
Boy.
Triple-digit inflation. The worst it got in the U.S. was extremely close to, you know, double-digit inflation. So that should really let you know how bad things have been. You've essentially had left-wing socialist governing in that country for over a generation, entire generation, and it's just led to absolute economic ruin. So he wins this big victory over the existing socialist government, and his platform is libertarian in the sense that, to the like economic core of libertarian, it's libertarian, where he says that like one of his policies he presented, for example, is using the dollar as a currency. You know, when you have had socialists in charge of an economy where they're always like, print more money, just print more money, we can pay bills, print more money, your country's currency essentially becomes worthless. He was like, let's just peg it to the dollar, and then let's start having cuts. Mm-hmm. You know, let's try to balance the budget. Let's have an actual functional economy.
It also sort of aligns you to the superpower in your hemisphere, right? Mm-hmm. I mean,
who'd have thought, you know, the one country that has for a very long time had somewhat semblance of a sound economy. He was like, let's peg our currency to that. And I want to say, so like some interesting facts about this guy is, so he's got five dogs, right? And they were like a centerpiece of his campaign. You know, they're kind of like unofficial mascot, and the dogs are cloned, right? Like,
He cloned the dogs?
This is only a libertarian kind of move, right?
Yeah.
So,
what do you mean they're cloned? Like, he had dogs before them, and these dogs were cloned off of those dogs?
The original dog, Conan, named for the movie Conan the Barbarian. Again, another win for this guy. that dog, a central player in his backstory, saying the dog saved his life and spent numerous Christmases alone with him when he felt abandoned by others. So he's got like the, you know, hero's arc of where he came. He's made the clone dogs symbols of his libertarian ideals by naming four of them for three conservative American economists, Marie Rothbard, Milton Friedman, and Robert Lucas. Oh, he did not get Ludwig von Mises.
He's a Rothbardian.
Yeah.
Holy shit. This guy's a straight up anarcho-capitalist.
That's what he says. So he said he's an anarcho-capitalist.
But this,
Fixing Social Security to a COLA increases on an annual basis? Is that the same kind of economy?
Not the same sort of thing.
Okay.
I think Donald Trump probably thinks that, like, I don't know, like, Hayek is Salma Hayek.
Which is awesome.
Which is awesome. Also,
at his rallies, he was famous for, he'd pull out a chainsaw and rev it and be like, this is what I'm going to take to spending. Right? So if you think about a country which has been ravaged by decades of socialist governance, which has driven that economy into the ground and then below the ground, which has completely devalued the currency, and which has made things so desperate that voters over 55, it says over 55% of the vote goes to this guy because they said something has to change. Things have gotten so desperate, and immediately the American press attacks this guy. It's like, he's dangerous.
Right.
This guy's trying to balance the budget.
Right. The point that you just made underscores what I say all the time about the media. And we do not know. You said it. But the Washington Post, the New York Times, they're not writing about the context that led to people wanting this guy to come to power. They're writing the color about what are the names of his dogs and does he hold a chainsaw and here's the picture and he is a radical just like Donald Trump. They never set the context on left-wing overreach.
Exactly.
The people are responding to that. They're not just like, oh, hey, bingo. I like the way his hair is cut.
Yep.
You know, like they're responding to something, and the media cheats people out of what they deserve, which is facts, which people are smart enough to be able to digest the circumstances that led to this. They did the same thing with President Trump.
They did.
They never talked about the left-wing overreach from the Obama administration that led to people wanting some radical change, and that's why they picked Trump.
There was this great, I don't know if you saw this video, Smug, of him, you know, looking at a whiteboard with all of these departments.
Yep.
Departments in the government.
Of
Argentina.
It's
where he's ripping them off the wall and saying, we're getting rid of that. Like, you know, like the Department of Sport.
Right.
You know.
Right.
Unnecessary.
Like the DEI department.
Yeah.
You know, like basically like just eliminating a bunch of human resources departments over and over and over again. And it's like, back to your point, it's like the media is in collusion with this idea of government insisting upon itself, right? Where it's like people are just pretending that they're doing work that's important when it's all fucking fake. And it's fake because we're all sitting here in the office and we got here in 8 minutes on the week of Thanksgiving.
Yeah.
Do you see what I'm saying?
Yeah, totally.
They're not fucking here.
No.
We're here.
Right.
Right?
Right.
And it's
That is
a very, very solid
very good point.
And I also think that, look, like guys like this and guys like Trump, I mean, obviously, I think they're ideologically worlds apart, as we just discussed. But what they figured out was that intellectually arguing an alternative point of view to the narrative that the media wants to paint would just end up in them being quoted in the seventh paragraph of a Washington Post, New York Times article.
Right.
But if you put a little top hat and cane routine together, if you bring a chainsaw out, if you come down a golden escalator, if you start talking about things that you shouldn't talk about, then they have to cover you.
And he does have
when they have to cover you, it captures the imagination of people who find things within your platform that they agree with that wouldn't have found you otherwise. And I think that that is a big part. I mean, look, Donald Trump is good politically for a whole variety of reasons in that he attracts people and people are interested in what he has to say. But I think his great genius here, and I think this guy's great genius, is that he forced people's attention towards him in a way that, like, look, God bless it. If everybody in this country had to pay attention to what Ron DeSantis is saying and doing on a day-to-day basis, this election wouldn't be close. Guy would be blown. He'd be 25 points ahead of Joe Biden. He'd probably win this primary by 20 points. But they're not going to. They're going to put it through the lens of what does his boots look like? Or what is his, you know, is what he talked about in terms of education profile banning books? Or is it inherently racist? All of those things are completely fucking nonsense. But that's what they can control.
And these guys, you can't control that.
That's the thing. So like he kind of used the same kind of like spoonful of sugar approach of like, okay, spoonful of sugar helps the medicine go down. Then you look at like his actual beliefs. It says he's against abortion. He's pro-gun. He's vowed to cut ties with China. China, and again, one of these countries. Well, it is basically the mob boss of going into countries that are suffering economically. They sink their claws into it, make the country further in debt, and just like try to take control. Through Belt and Road, they've done this to so many countries around the world. He's vowed to cut ties with China. He insulted Pope Francis. He thinks he's too woke. And says humans are not behind climate change.
Hell yeah.
He's a great sound guy. He's got some good ideas.
I get it.
Here's the only bad part. Can I tell you the bad part?
Yeah, what's the bad part?
Okay, here's the bad part. The bad part is the libertarians are never going to let us forget this. This is their huge victory. And so...
Oh, I see what's happening here.
You know, they're going to be like, I can still vote for the libertarian and make sure Republicans lose close elections.
Oh, but don't search my internet. I'm going to take 6% off, but don't search my internet.
You know, it's like the DSCC will run a libertarian in a Senate race literally to do this.
No, they do that.
They do that frequently.
I want you all to know this. If you are listening, and I know there's a fair number of you who are consider yourselves libertarian, I want you to know that the candidate that's on your slate, more likely than not, is either economically or literally recruited by a Democrat in a national position to have you vote against your interests and allow the Democrat to win.
Yeah.
You need to know that.
All I'm saying is this will do that more.
It might. It might. Anyway, I think that was great. And by the way, I got a lot more out of that segment than I thought we would.
I learned a lot.
More you'll get from the news.
Smug, you're so international.
I try.
You're very, very good at this. All right, so do you guys want to talk about the insurrection at the DNC?
Absolutely.
So you may or may not have seen over the weekend that the DNC had, well, shall we say, a little bit of an uprising.
Oh, no.
Yeah. And it turns out all of those people that we were told that didn't exist.
Mm-hmm.
You know, they were figments of our imagination in the universities and the protests around this country. They came to Washington, D.C., just a handful of them. And, you know, just, I don't know, 72 hours, maybe 100 hours after you had 300,000 pro-Israeli people in the National Mall hugging each other and supporting each other and trying to drive a positive message, these folks show up and they decided they're going to go to the DNC. Because there's a constituency there, as I have said.
A constituency.
Constituency. Let's go to this first clip, folks. Let's take a look at this thing. For those of you who are on a audio-only medium, we'll help describe it to you. There are people who have forced what looks like at least 100 United States Capitol Police officers to try to defend the DNC. And the DNC in this capacity is not just a building that's empty. There were the hierarchy of the Democratic leadership inside at the time. I'm told that Minority Leader Jeffries was in there amongst other people within the leadership. And these people were trying to storm the building.
And there were multiple Capitol Police officers sent to the hospital after they were attacked. And only one individual was arrested for assault.
Only one. Let's go to clip number two and take a look at this sane lady. Very normal, very well-adjusted folks outside of the DNC.
Can I know every person in that video clip for the folks who aren't listening? who was shouting at the camera and also who were screaming as the police were dragging them away. Liberal white women.
Yeah.
I mean, look.
And paid to be there.
Can I say something
yeah,
real
please,
quick
please,
up,
please,
up
please,
the top?
Please, please.
I think rage has become a commodity in our politics and internet culture. And in watching that woman, all I could think of was, here is a theater kid thinking they've got an opportunity to get some likes. Like, maybe they believe that. Like, maybe they believe it. Everybody wants this ceasefire with terrorists and stuff. But, like, the... And again,
but
subscribe to our YouTube so you could actually watch that video and tell me I'm wrong.
But
I don't know if that person actually really believes that.
No, I know what you're saying.
It looks like an act.
But let me ask you. She believes it because I think, yes, she was probably a theater kid.
Yeah.
But that's like step one in the radicalization process. Now.
Well, yeah. I mean, let me just, I think to your point, but this builds on what you were saying, Duncan. Is this somebody who's just like saying what they're saying to try to curry favor on the internet or whatever? Or are they all, the modern left, living a modern-day leftist Truman Show? Like, do they is it all a theatrical production?
Yeah, I think it is.
Because, I mean, how else do you describe Queers for Palestine? How else do you describe all of these very... Like, that woman right there, I didn't see her burqa. Did you see a burqa there?
And that's the thing. So this goes hand in hand.
Her head would be fucking chopped off if she's in Gaza. Like, what are we talking about?
This goes hand in hand with, like, what Duncan was describing, the, like, whole luxury beliefs thing, where this is a group in history who has had essentially the easiest life possible. So they have to create their own problem. Like, oh, wow, you know, these are the things that I am suffering through.
Right.
And that's why I'm a freedom fighter on the front lines. It's like, no, you're not. You live in Connecticut.
Right.
You know, like, you had Starbucks three times today, man.
And can I also point something out? And this goes back to our previous discussion of radical Islam and Osama bin Laden. They had luxury beliefs. And I want everybody to understand that. Like, Osama bin Laden was a Nepo baby.
Oh, yeah.
Like, he's a fucking, from a billionaire, like, construction family. Like, Ayman al-Zawahiri was a doctor. Saeed Qutb was a professor. It's like... They act like they were the vanguard of the underserved people in the Muslim world. They weren't. They weren't. These were rich people who decided that they wanted to murder everybody in the world.
That's why I don't trust doctors. I don't trust professors.
I got a real...
It's all luxury beliefs, dude. The people that are acting out the most don't actually have real fucking problems.
Is nobody playing team sports anymore?
No.
Is that what's going on?
I think they are. I think they clearly are.
Like, don't you have anything to root for?
I think
you always have to root against your own interests. You don't have anything. Like, where's the jersey here?
There's none.
Where's the jersey?
Well, that's the thing. Like, there's people. The party is not like the, again, like, it's, this is said so frequently. This is not the Democrat Party of your parents. This is not Bill Clinton's Democrat Party.
No, this is not Hubert Humphrey. This is
Barack Obama's Democrat Party. When he
it's
says
sick,
like
dude.
We are going to like a party based upon the idea of what are they called? The organizers.
Right.
You know, these are he was raised by the Weather Underground. This is a radical, and he's injected that energy into this party where they're all like, I'm an activist and I'm out here on the front lines fighting an intifada.
But the inflection point was 2020. It was when people put the black square on Instagram.
Yep.
That was their indulgence they had to pay to the people who were burning down cities in America.
Yep.
Right? And then once they did that, when they put that black square on and they saw the reaction that they got.
They're like, you're so brave.
You're so brave. Thank you for being an ally.
The dopamine hit of the Instagram.
That's how you get that woman like this.
Yeah.
Crazed fucking eyes. Talking about how everybody wants a ceasefire and we're out in front of the DNC. It's a fucking act. They're theater kids. They got the one thing that they wanted their whole life, which was validation, and they're never going to let it go. Can I have a pop, please?
I'll pass it on down. I mean, that's a really good point. Go ahead, Ashbrook.
Whenever I see something like this, I always wonder, how is the media covering it? And I opened the Washington Post the morning after this insurrection occurred outside of the DNC, and it was not reported on in the print paper.
It didn't make the paper.
It was amazing to me.
There's only a certain time when you report on whether any Capitol Police were assaulted, and there's a time when you don't.
Well, I I checked it. I looked at every page. It wasn't even in the Metro section.
Wait, I mean, it didn't make it at all?
Not at all in the print. And so I took a picture of the front page and I tweeted it out. And some people on the left said, oh, well, this happened at 7 p.m. This was after press time. There's no possible way.
As if we're living in 1924 where they're like,
there's like the late city edition. These
like working the full print press?
Exactly. How about a picture and a caption? How long does it take to upload a picture and write a caption and put it on the front page of the paper and talk about insurrection by radicals outside of the DNC? Right. They just refused to do it because all they wanted to print was something negative about Israelis because that's their narrative.
Like we moved away from setting the type for the paper the next day in the 1980s.
I know.
Dude, you know, like know. You could change it. You could.
It's digital.
And they have like the late city edition. Yeah. They would drop that when a story drops.
Right.
They can always throw out new editions and then run them to bodegas.
Right, but they didn't do that because this is
100%.
There is a strand of Democrats who know that this lady doesn't play well.
And that's why I hold your journal buddies accountable. But you let them know they can get away with it.
I love it. Well, we have to get him some revenge, so we're going to go to Animal News next. This is going to put, it's really going to chap Smash's hide. Mm. There was a gang of violent monkeys that killed a 10-year-old boy in India. Mm. These are people, Smug. Can you believe this?
Who lets their kid out to be attacked by monkeys?
Well, it's in the New York Post. It says a gang of violent monkeys terrorizing a town in India struck again, killing a 10-year-old by ripping out his intestines.
Oh my God.
Are you kidding me?
Yeah. This kid was playing with his friends in a small village when he was attacked by what has become a notorious gang of monkeys.
They've struck before, clearly.
With one of the animals digging claws into the boy and tearing out his intestines, according to the report from The Sun. So, we've talked about the monkeys on occasion.
Right. There's a very, very simple solution. We've talked about it on this show for a while, but we haven't brought it up.
A banana pool?
And, you know, it's been probably a year. So let's just describe the solution. You dig an Olympic-sized swimming pool. You fill it with water and you cover the top with bananas. The monkeys go after the banana. They drown in the pool. Problem solved.
Maybe, can I add a piece of this? Maybe electrify
the pool. Throw a hairdryer in there.
Great idea.
Maybe electrify the pool. Some kind of a current that just ensures that they can't swim.
And the thing is that, like, this has happened. This was in Japan. I think we also had it.
Mm-hmm.
South Korea. Like, this is a thing that's happening across the world. Like, at what point, and when it says a notorious gang.
A notorious gang.
At what point is it like, shoot on sight?
Right. Like, get a little, like, birdshot. Like, pepper them up.
I remember in the U.S., this was probably, like, 10 years ago. People probably don't remember. Real internet OGs remember. There was someone who sent out a tweet of, like, my kids are playing outside and like 50 wild, this is in Texas, 50 wild boars rolled up. And so they're like, me and some dudes are going out with ARs and we're going to clear them out. And like all these libs were like, what the hell? This is the dumbest shit.
No, that's the way we roll.
Like, there's no wild boars. It's like, dude, wild boars are like a tremendous threat in Texas and they will go for kids.
They will.
They will go for kids.
Yeah. Right.
So like those Texans, they've got the playbook.
Right.
You get the gun and you kill the animal and you defend your family.
You know, and some people think that monkeys are too smart for the banana pool. Some people think they're too smart for, you know, walking into a trap with people with guns. Another option that could be considered is that you hire an army of liberal looking white women in like khaki shirts. They go into the country as if they're going in to like help the monkeys. They're going to bring them out. The monkeys know this type. And they take a banana, they dip it in antifreeze, and they give the monkey the banana, and the monkey dies.
Antifreeze is sweet.
Wow.
Yeah.
That's a horrific thing to know.
Yeah.
I think that, I mean, look, the man is...
That's a horrific there's no thing.
I only know that from true crime
I'm
stuff.
Never letting Duncan there's make no, me a drink.
There's no end
great
of what he
fashion,
knows.
It's pretty sweet.
There's a lot of different ways to kill an animal.
Yeah.
And if you're going to do it, look, keep your eye on that
if these
gun.
Animals are killing 10-year-old kids, you have to take the fight to them.
100%.
That's right. I agree.
All right, so the last thing that we've got before we get to this interview is on brand, because it reflects the interview itself, Randy.
Mm.
Randy Weingarten, of course, is the head of the American Federation of Teachers. This is a woman that we've learned to hate with all of our hearts over the last few years because she was responsible for one of a million different things, keeping kids out of school, putting kids behind The curve, they were absolutely destroying a generation.
Supported of, every horrible, like masking and keeping cool, school shut down was like her guiding principles.
It was her guiding principle. And so she sent out a tweet like, what's behind this increase in homeschooling? Very concerned about it. Very concerned about it.
And like, that's her concern. It's not like the fact that we have so much data that kids have fallen behind. She's like, why aren't more of them going to my union factories?
Right. Right.
It's like an arsonist like complaining that houses are burning down.
She is. And can I read you guys? So she is ostensibly supposed to be the head of the union that argues for teachers to have better benefits and blah, 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 blah. Right. Right. Teachers are supposed to benefit from her organization. Can I read you a statistic that I saw in the newspaper just
Please.
A month ago? Public school teachers have long made less money than other professionals, but last year the gap hit its widest level since 1960.
I mean, she's a failure.
On what level can she say she's had any success?
Well,
she
because
has to be pushed
she's
out.
She's got no bipartisan buy-in whatsoever. I mean, teachers in the education of children is the most bipartisan thing in the history of issues in this America. Everybody would think that that is a good thing to do. The problem is that she's made it inherently the most partisan possible thing. They're a mouthpiece for the Democratic Party.
Right.
I think they want, it's like 99% of their contributions go to Democratic candidates. Her wife is a LGBT rabbi in New York who's known as like one of the most liberal rabbis in the country. And like, this is not a mainstream thing. Like, if you're going to try to represent teachers, it's like, dude, that's like representing construction workers
Everybody builds a house. Everybody sends their kids to school.
Yeah.
Like, it's not a partisan thing.
It's not a partisan. How has this become a left-wing fucking thing?
Because
it just drives me absolutely insane.
Because
she's doing them dirty.
They've turned these schools into left-wing camps. Here's the thing is, we spend more in this country on education than any other nation on earth, and we get the worst outcomes possible.
Yeah.
Where's that money going? Is it going to teachers' unions? Is it going to packing every school with DEI instructors?
But dude,
and so like, the, and then you look at the teachers themselves. What does the inside of a public school classroom look like these days? Does it look like they're being taught reading, writing, arithmetic, or does it look like, you know, you're either attending a sensitivity training camp, you're at a pride parade? Like, this is supposed to be where you're sending children to learn.
Right.
You know,
right.
There's a reason that they're trying to get rid of every academic test. SATs have been removed. They say AP exams are racist.
Well, they're racist.
They are stealing money from people who are in it for the right reasons. Why in the world can the money that goes to the DEI and all the administrators and Randy Weingarten and her stupid programs, why can't that go to teachers who are like doing their level best to get kids educated? I don't understand.
She blocked me on Twitter because I pointed out when she was doing like some video hit of like, oh, this is why this is way back, why teachers are important during the pandemic, and like I'm doing everything I can to fight with them. The background for video was her PJ.
Dude,
again,
you've got a
again,
PJ,
money
man.
Coming out, money coming out of the pockets.
She has
of
a PJ.
Teachers.
She had a PJ behind her. She's like, I'm out here fighting.
She's everything that's wrong with education.
PJ?
Everything that's wrong.
PJ too.
Can I just say, this is going to be an unpopular take.
No, it won't.
This is our fault.
Yes. We should have jailed the teachers long ago.
This is our fault.
I think I know where you're going, and I agree with it.
If you've been so disconnected, as I admit I have, from something as important as the education of the next generation of America, that you've allowed politically this to continue, we're at fault.
Mm-hmm.
We're at fault. You got to get involved. Like, you got to, there is no element of your life that is too important for you to not get involved in shit like that. Otherwise, this is a left-wing lunatic. This is somebody that you wouldn't hire to mow your fucking lawn. This is somebody who is like, you've never met anybody like this.
Right.
And she runs the public teachers union for the United States. And she's educating teachers on what policies are best for them. Like, no wonder that all of them oppose school choice. Never mind the fact that they would triple their fucking salary if school choice actually happened. This fucking nimwit is telling them every single day that nope, the only way to do it is keep sending 60% to me. I'll find my PJ. I will tell everybody they can't go to school, and then I'll turn around and tell them I was the one who told them to go to school.
Yeah.
The most dishonest
And they get away with it. Meanwhile, like, they're a part of the Biden administration. They're all part of it.
That's the thing, because she, if we're being honest, she doesn't lead a teachers union. She leads a voting bloc for Democrats.
Yeah.
That's right.
She's like, her job is getting voters to the poll sites for Democrats.
There's
a reason why, like, I remember when my eyes were open to this in New York City of the reason that they specifically are like, we will use public schools and then we will have a day off for all public school teachers. And then public school teachers are out there in front of poll sites handing out pamphlets for Democrats. It's rigged. They're out there for votes. They're not out there to teach kids.
She is using people who are in it for the right reasons to further some political
goal. I don't know if a lot of these teachers are in for the right reasons.
I
think you'd be surprised, dude.
More of them are.
I've seen them.
You're absolutely wrong.
More of them are than you think.
My follow lives of TikTok. Nobody, I've seen these teachers.
Nobody supports the ones.
The jails are empty.
Dude, I'm telling you. I'm telling you, my son goes to a public Montessori. He's 4 years old, and his teachers are fantastic. But there are administrators that are difficult, and the system is difficult, especially when represented by people like her.
You got to just get involved.
You do.
You got to wake up. Wake the fuck up, because this is something that's not just education. It's everything. It's happening. Your kids are liking things from Osama bin Laden. Your teachers are left-wing lunatics. Like, you've got to just get involved on this. And this is like a message for the holiday season. Like, sit down, turn off the TV, get your phones out of there. Talk to your kids, spend some time with them. Super important, because the next generation of America and America itself may rely on it.
Mm-hmm.
Anyway, let's go to this interview. This is Corey DeAngelis. He runs one of the answers that we could
get.
A lot of our listeners know.
I mean, this is a tremendous person to talk on the subject.
Well, if you've listened to the Ruthless Variety program, you know that there are a couple of issues that we keep coming back to time and again, regardless of whether or not they are on the front page of your newspaper this morning. And one of them, school choice. And to do that, we thought no better than to bring in our old friend, Corey DeAngelis. How are you, sir?
Hey, doing well. It's good to see you.
Good to see you. I mean, listen, American Federation for Children, you guys are everywhere. You're winning these battles out across the country. I know that our listeners in particular have had a lot of interest in this and think that the national media basically doesn't talk enough about it. But I know at a state level, you guys have been ginning up an incredible amount of momentum on this. And I thought maybe we would just kind of hand it over and you'd let us know what's going on currently.
Yeah, totally. Look, at the American Federation for Children, we fight to fund students, not systems. The money meant for educating children should follow the child to wherever they're getting an education. That could be a public school. If you like your public school, you can keep your public school, but for real this time, unlike with your doctor. But if not, you should be able to take that money to a private home or other type of educational setting that works for you. But look, we've had a ton of momentum, like you said. Over the past 2 years alone, we've had 10 states, a fifth of all states, go universal on school choice, meaning every single family, regardless of income, background, zip code, can take their children's education dollars to the public, private, or homeschool of their choice. Most recently being North Carolina. They went all in, becoming the 10th state to do so, and the first one without a Republican trifecta. They have a Democrat governor, Roy Cooper, who's a hypocrite on school choice, sent his own daughter to private school, which is great. He should be able to have that opportunity, but he shouldn't fight against lower income families having the same kind of choices. And he even declared a state of emergency over school choice this year because he was so worried about unleashing education freedom and his donors, the teachers unions, losing their monopoly.
That's amazing. So, but look, I mean, this is one of those issues we've talked about post-COVID where it got a fresh set of eyes from a whole different range of parents. This is not anywhere near a partisan issue at this point. Everybody got to see it up close and personally, and you guys have been able to capture an awful lot of momentum of people being tuned in at a very local level to their own children's education.
Right. Vodi Bakum said it best. We cannot continue to send our children to Caesar for their education and be surprised when they come home as Romans. Well, the good news is parents aren't surprised anymore. The teachers' unions overplayed their hand and awakened a sleeping giant, which happens to be parents who want more of a say in their kids' education. I mean, we saw in the Virginia election, we're pretty close to Virginia, with Glenn Youngkin destroying Terry McAuliffe, who said, "I don't think parents should be telling schools what they should teach." Mm-hmm. Youngkin won with education voters in a state that apparently went to Biden 10 points the year before.
Yeah.
By 6 points, he won with education voters. That was the number two issue in the election. He laid out a blueprint for success for Republicans trying to win political office. And we really got to thank Randy Weingarten and the teachers unions. I mean, I woke up to what I thought was a Babylon Bee article headline a few months ago. It wasn't. It wasn't a dream either.
Since the one where she said, "I was working so hard to get your kids back."
That was one of us. She basically gaslit Congress, and she got a community note slapped on her tweets for lying about it. She kept trying to say, "Oh, we've been fighting to keep the schools open since April of 2020. If that's true, why weren't your schools open? But the private schools that weren't unionized, they were open, while she was threatening safety strikes at the time.
For sure.
She was lobbying the CDC to make it more difficult to reopen schools. You had local affiliates like Chicago Teachers Union. They were vacationing in Puerto Rico in person while saying it was too difficult or too dangerous to go back to work in person. Well, if it was safe enough to go vacation, why wasn't it safe enough to go back to work? It didn't make any sense. They were fear-mongering, throwing everything at the wall to see what would stick. They even deleted a tweet, I know you remember this one, where they said, "The push to reopen schools is rooted in sexism, racism, and misogyny." Meanwhile, we just found out that Stacey Davis Gates, their president, sends her own kid to private school after just calling school choice last year racist and also calling private school segregation academies. But now she sends her own kid to private school.
Which is so amazing to me. That is the ultimate, like, 1984 style stuff, right?
Yeah, I mean, they're just completely shameless at this point.
I mean, calling school choice racist is one of the more amazing things you can hear on a day-to-day basis. But, I mean, the thing is that not only are you guys making progress, you've been tracking some results, too. I mean, you've made a lot of progress, and parents seem pretty damn happy when they have school choice.
Right. Yeah, I think a couple of the reasons why we've seen so much success is parents woke up, parents who thought their kids were in great public schools because of test scores started to see that whether the curriculum aligns with your values is arguably more important. You don't want to send your kid to an institution where you feel like they're being brainwashed to hate you for 13 years. You want to raise your kid in a way that's aligned with your values. So we've seen the arguments for choice shift a little bit. The moms that are showing up at the school board meetings, they're showing up at the Capitol in the ballot box, too, to hold politicians accountable. So American Federation for Children, what we like to say is in the midterms, we didn't have a red wave, we didn't have a blue wave, but there was a school choice wave. 76% of the candidates supported by the American Federation for Children and our state affiliates won their races in 2022.
Wow, that's a big stat.
And we didn't just play in the easy ones. It wasn't, you know, just incumbent defense. We challenged 69 incumbents in state legislatures, the hardest thing to do in politics, mm-hmm. and we took out 40 of them.
Oh, wow.
So school choice has become a political winner. It's more importantly become a GOP litmus test issue.
Those totally.
Conservatives upset Agreed. About the school boards at school board meetings. They're also wanting more of a say in their kids' education and wanting to be able to choose a school that works best for them. And they reject wholeheartedly this idea that the kid belongs to the government. The parents are in the best position to make the decision.
So let's talk a little bit more about those wins, because you mentioned North Carolina. Last time we ran into you was in Iowa.
Iowa, yep.
We had just come off, 12 hours at the state fair?
drenched
in sweat.
Felt like a while.
And up comes that. Corey, and he's like, "Hey, man, what's going on?" And we're like, "Oh, we're dying. we're dying. Does anybody have water?"
You have a lot of energy, Corey. That's what I remember thinking.
And, I know Iowa's done.
I'm almost getting tired of winning. We're winning so much.
Iowa's done a lot of work in this. And could you tell us a little bit more about, you know, the other places that you've had success thus far?
Yeah, look, we've went all in, first of all, in West Virginia. That was 2021. They were the first state to go universal on school choice with no income limits. And for listeners, this is a big deal because for a long time in the school choice movement, you might have heard about it before, but there's been decades of incremental reform where it's, oh, we're just going to pass a small program over mm-hmm. here, maybe a pilot program.
Yeah, pilot program.
Maybe just for low-income families over here or just special needs students. But people have really woken up and realize that, well, everybody should have the opportunity. We shouldn't pick winners and losers. We don't restrict access to government schools based on income. We shouldn't restrict access to school choice based on income. And we've been seeing bigger pushes than we ever have before. So Arizona was the second state. It got a lot of attention last year with Governor Doug Ducey calling on the legislature to pass the bill. And it's also a big deal in Arizona because They had one-seat GOP majorities in both chambers. They had the slimmest of margins, which meant every single Republican had to show up, vote for their party platform issue of empowering parents with school choice, and they all showed up and did it. And since then, we've had 10 states total, Iowa being the first to do so in 2023. Then we had Arkansas, Utah, Oklahoma, Ohio, and others.
Yeah.
All red states, typically, except for North Carolina with the Democrat governor who didn't go along with it voluntarily. It's because he didn't have enough power to override a veto, because every single Republican signed on to the bill in North Carolina as well, giving them the 60% override numbers in both chambers required to override a veto in North Carolina. So it has been red states. I hope it gets to blue states at some point, but the Democratic Party's owned by the teachers unions. Randy Weingarten, who we mentioned earlier, over 99% of her campaign contributions in 2022 went to Democrats. Yeah, so the unions surprised. Are basically an arm of the Democratic Party.
Who's the dude that got the Weingarten on the Republican side, right?
Like, yeah.
No thanks.
It's interesting, though. I'm curious your take on this is, you know, there's interesting bipartisan coalition building around this issue. I'm curious if you've seen that sort of shift here in the post-COVID world as well, because you got to give them credit. There are some urban members of the Democrat Party who have, against their better instincts and the money of the teachers' unions, embraced this wholeheartedly.
Right. Yeah.
You know, so where are the opportunities there?
Yeah, so if you look at the polling, and if you don't look at the teachers' unions' numbers, you'll see a different story. Mm-hmm. The latest Real Clear Opinion Research polling from this year found that a supermajority of Republicans, Democrats, and independents across party lines support the concept of school choice nationwide. And we've had some votes here and there where Democrats actually crossed party lines and joined the Republicans. In Florida, for example, they passed universal school choice this year. They've been a leader on school choice for a long time, but they went all in this year. And four Democrats in the House in Florida voted in favor of school choice. So it can be done. And if you look at some of the high-profile Democrats, which I wrote about in the Wall Street Journal, in Pennsylvania and Illinois, Josh Shapiro, who was running against Doug Mastriano, who was way up in the polls by double digits, Doug Mastriano started calling him out for being a hypocrite on school choice, saying, hey, you went to private school, Josh, and you sent your kids to private school. Why shouldn't other families have that choice? Josh Shapiro did a smart political calculation, read the tea leaves, and put school choice in his education platform right before the midterms.
Yeah.
And so he took away those accusations of hypocrisy by doing so. He talked about Lifeline Scholarships, a private school choice program proposal in Pennsylvania on Fox News this year. He ultimately caved to the teachers unions, who donated over $700,000 to him last year. He vetoed his own campaign promise to school choice, which, to me, that's a bold strategy, Cotton. Let's see if it works out for him.
It is amazing. I mean, Democrats do have they're stuck between a rock and a hard place on this, as they do to themselves on almost all sort of progressive or even establishment Democrat stuff, in that they know what's right. And they know that their predominant constituencies within the Democratic Party who are the primary beneficiaries of the policy. So you see this happen time and again, where you get, maybe it'll start at a city level, where you've got really underperforming schools, and you'll have this block of Democratic city council people who are like, you know, this is really the right thing to do. And the next thing you know, they have nothing but primaries on the left run by the teachers union.
Or you're a guy like Josh Shapiro, and you look in the mirror and you see a president, and
you're like, oh,
I don't know, this could be a problem.
Yeah, I can't have that.
Can't help kids.
Boy, that would be what a huge mistake.
Sir, that would be disqualifying.
Right.
Well, the same thing happened in Illinois, though. 3 weeks before the 2022 election, Pritzker, who was way up in the polls, he had no problem with his reelection. He answered a candidate survey in favor of school choice, the same program he vowed to eliminate in 2017 and 2018. He said he was in favor of right before the election.
Oh.
And then this year he did nothing really to save the program, but he didn't really attack it either. And then just like a week or two ago, he reported to the Chicago Tribune that if a bill comes to his desk to save their low-income school choice program, that he would sign it. He might have done that knowing it's never going to make it to his desk. But my point is, by illustrating...
Yeah, they know the political liability.
We're now seeing that at least they have, they feel compelled to signal support for school choice. That's good news for supporters of education freedom and parents in the long run. And I think the way we get there is something I call bipartisanship through hyperpartisanship. In the short run, the more that the Republicans win on the issue of parental rights, the more, and then more that they lean into that as a political winner, the more it becomes politically disastrous to, for Democrats to oppose it. And so
if
the Republicans are silent on the issue, though, it'll remain a partisan issue. But it because politicians respond to power, not logic. And so the more Terry McAuliffe moments we see happen, the more National School Board Association moments we see happen where they basically, I don't know if you remember this, obviously you do, that they sent a letter to the DOJ implying that some parents should be investigated for domestic terrorism. We should rename them the Regional School Boards Association at this point because 26 states pulled their funding or membership in a very short a period of time. Which just goes to show you that parents, if they band together, can have real political power too.
Well, and Corey, I think you're right in that you said it's becoming a litmus test for Republicans, Republican governors in particular. But it's not just sort of taking the position. What you've noticed, at least what we've been following along, is that those Republican governors who are sort of the most aggressive at trying to produce results, not just sort of sit in the governor's mansion, but actually... we need these three things done. It seems more likely than not, this is one of them.
Yeah, we saw that with Governor Doug Ducey in January 2022, calling on the legislature to send him school choice to let's expand school choice any way he can. He said something along those lines, and he did it. He got it done, and he led the way and showed other red states that it can happen. In Arkansas, last year when they tried to pass a school choice bill, they did. And it, but it only got 51% of the chamber in the House last year, barely passed a small program for only like 200 students. Well, then you get Governor Huckabee Sanders in place. She fought, made the LEARNS Act a priority, which was included in their school choice program. I think they call them education freedom accounts. I think more states should do that, by the way. New Hampshire does as well. That's what they call their program. But I think three quarters or more of the chamber under Sarah Huckabee Sanders' leadership voted in favor of that bill. So
yeah, I mean, it was
leadership
right on
her
platform,
difference.
Right? And she, you post a victory like that, people take notice. Kim Reynolds is another one.
Yeah,
I mean, we were just talking about.
Right.
I mean, I think people in Iowa for a long time, because of all the old saws about rural schools and whatnot, figured that states like Iowa would be the toughest to get done.
And which
she,
is interesting.
She got that done.
She did get it done, and she sponsored school choice bills both years, this year and last year. Mm-hmm. Last year, Senate passed it no problem. Only one Republican voted against it with the Democrats, and they have a very GOP-controlled majority over there in Iowa. It went over to the House, where they have a 60% legislature at the time controlled by the Republican Party, and she could they could not get it done. They just would not pass the bill. They were so dug in against it for whatever reason. And what happened was she ended up primarying, engaging in 9 primary races and ousting a bunch of the incumbents who were against school choice.
That'll get people's
got a new house, and then they passed an even bigger bill. So the joke in Iowa is that the Democrats should have voted for the smaller proposal that she proposed in 2022. They would have had a smaller school choice program. Instead, they got a new house, real Republicans voting for their party platform, and they went all in, being the first state to go universal in 2023. I'm from Texas.
Yeah.
We have a similar
out. I know
right
that's been a debate here over the last couple of years. Yep. Where does that sit now?
Yeah, so right now in the regular session, the Senate, again, passed it no problem. Yeah. Only one GOP defector, just like in Iowa, a similar story, went over to the House that has about a 60% Republican control in Texas, same exact kind of makeup as the Iowa story. And now you have Governor Abbott promising political consequences for fake Republicans in the Texas House who vote against their party platform of school choice. And so the same kind of thing happened. He pushed it hard. He campaigned the state over a dozen cities fighting for school choice. The polling is overwhelmingly in favor of school choice in Texas. You look at University of Houston polling, University of Texas Austin, UT Tyler, Dallas Morning News, Morning Consult polling. About any poll you look, Texas Tribune, which is against school choice, finds majority support of Texans, or at least a plurality of support, supporting, even when you use the biased terminology of school vouchers as opposed to school choice or scholarships or education savings accounts. And so they won it. You look at the primary voters, they overwhelmingly won it. They put it on the ballot in Texas last year in 2022 in March, and they put a proposition number 9 on that ballot, and 88% of Texas Republican primary voters supported it on the ballot last year, which was up 9 points since they last had it on the primary ballot in 2018. But you hear this argument in states like Texas that have rural areas that, well, I can still vote against school choice, a party platform issue, and still be a Republican in that area because I have a rural constituency and they don't want it here and we don't have a lot of school choice. But what's funny is they'll make two logically incompatible arguments at the same time. They'll say, on the one hand, well, we can't use it. The public school is the only option. But in the next breath, with a straight face, they'll look you in the eye and they'll try to tell you, well, this is going to decimate and defund
the public
school. Fantastic rural public schools. Hold on a second. Which one is it?
Do you have choices or not?
If you don't have choices, how if schools are funded based on enrollment or attendance counts, if no one leaves, you should be the last person making this argument that's going to defund your school. And by the way, if they're fantastic schools and everybody loves them, then you shouldn't have to anything to fear about a little
be a
competition.
Problem.
Exactly.
And
88% of Republican primary voters are in favor of
it. And these are the deepest red areas. Right. If anything, rural voters are more supportive of school choice. We found this in Iowa, too, from polling, than in urban areas. The rural voters are more supportive. And if you look historically speaking, this is just a ridiculous argument we're hearing today. It's a way for fake Republicans who are already endorsed by Randy Weingarten's union, who send their own kids to private school, to have their cake and eat it too, pretend they're Republicans, vote against the party platform, side with the leftists at the Randy Weingarten's teachers unions, and block school choice. But in the first state I mentioned already to go universal was West Virginia. They're way more rural than Texas.
Yeah.
It wasn't an impediment for them. Texas senators all voted for school. It was an 18-13 vote. The Republicans, except for one, all voted for school choice in Texas. Wasn't an issue for them. They live in the same areas. They mm-hmm. represent the same areas. In Maine and Vermont, they're not Republican states today, but they had the oldest voucher programs in the country. They started in the late 1800s. And they're called town tuitioning programs, still on the books today. They created these programs in Maine and Vermont because they were so rural. Mm. They found out over 100 years ago that not having a lot of options was an argument to expand opportunity, not to restrict it. They had certain places that didn't have public schools in rural areas, so the state gave vouchers to families to go to other public schools in other areas or to go to private religious or non-religious schools. So yeah. Maine and Vermont figured this out over 100 years ago. If you don't have a lot of choice, let's expand it, not restrict it.
Well, the one thing you got going for you is a hell of a lot of public support that feels like it's only growing. And you guys are doing a great job. It sounds like we've got a battle plan in some of the states that you mentioned, but you know, we follow this on a national level, and you look at the presidential campaign stages, not a lot of disagreement about this set of issues. I mean, everybody feels pretty good about it. And you got to love that platform, right? I mean, they use that platform. You hear basically all the Republican candidates talking about this as a really important thing to get done across the board.
Yeah, and if you look at the new speaker, Mike Johnson, he signed on to a school choice bill called the Educational Choice for Children Act. He's a co-sponsor. I think there's about 130 Republican co-sponsors in the U.S. House and about 30 co-sponsors who are all Republicans in the U.S. Senate. So this is one way, through a tax credit mechanism, not using government federal dollars, it's using private donations to get a tax write-off to benefit from school choice at the federal level. That way we can supercharge school choice in red states, but also expand it to blue states who are have legislators who are owned by the teachers' unions. I mean, there's a couple ways to expand it in blue states. One is you can put it on the ballot to circumvent the lawmakers who are owned by the teachers' unions. You can pass a federal school choice program like the one Mike Johnson supports and several other Republicans in Congress. And then three is more of a long-term play, which is the Democrats need to start to defect on the issue because it hurts them at the ballot box. I mean, you look at this Wall Street Journal article from 2018 talking about DeSantis's victory. He barely won in 2018. Mm-hmm. The headline was school choice moms tipped the governor's race in Florida. And that's because they had a school choice program benefiting over 100,000 kids already, disproportionately from low-income families and from non-white families. And exit polling showed that black moms in particular turned out in favor of DeSantis, probably because his opponent, a black Democrat, actually, Andrew Gillum, he was calling against the school choice program benefiting a lot of students. So this is a way that Republicans could win over voters that historically were less likely to vote for them before. So it's the right thing to do, obviously. It's a political winner, too, for Republicans, especially in the short run. But in the long run, it might become more of a political winner for Democrats.
Yeah, I agree. I agree. If they can figure out their own primary issues, it would be a winner across the board.
as a partisan, I feel just very comfortable that Republicans have ownership over this issue currently. But I would like to see it get done. So you're in town. You've got a big soiree. People winning awards.
Yeah, it's called the FreeOp Conference, F-R-E-O-P-P. Make sure that's right. It stands for something real long. Figure it out. I'll be on stage tonight with presenting Betsy DeVos, former Secretary of Education, with their Frederick Douglass Award. And I believe Governor Doug Ducey from Arizona is winning an award as well, the Frederick Douglass Award, for advancing freedom and prosperity throughout the nation. And DeVos, obviously, you know, not a lot of, like, we were all talking about school choice already, but it was less of a national issue. The media certainly wasn't freaking out about it as much before DeVos went into office.
No question.
So I'm glad that she had that opportunity to put a spotlight on the issue, which also helps supercharge our efforts in recent years. We really should just invite Randy Weingarten to the conference tonight. We need to rewrite the agenda because she's done more to advance the concept of school choice and freedom and home education options more than anyone could have ever imagined.
Nobody can unify Americans like she can.
We're in D.C. The AFT offices are nearby, so maybe I'll present her with a trophy later on.
What a good idea.
Leave it at their doorstep.
What a good idea. I love that. All right, if everybody wants to follow along with what you guys are up to and potentially get involved, where do they go?
You can follow me on Twitter, or now X. It's at DeAngelis Corey. Or if you want to help us in the fight for education freedom, you can take the Education Freedom Pledge. Really easy website. It's educationfreedompledge.com. Or for short, if you don't want to type that much, if you went to a government school like me and you don't know how to type, you can just for short type in edfreedompledge.com.
Got it. Perfect. That makes it easy enough. Corey, thanks for your time. Thanks for what you're doing.
All right. Thank you guys so much for having me.
Yeah.
Boy's obviously very, very smart.
Yeah.
And he has incredible ideas. I mean,
fighting the good fight, like truly, this is an individual who, and again, devoid of any self-interest. This is someone who is attacked on a daily basis, has had death threats. And their only concern is how do we make sure kids get a good education?
And he's still sort of looking next to where they can win, which is what I really appreciate. And like, look, dude, education's tough. It's not cut and dry. It's not red and blue. You know,
none of us want you to be indoctrinated into a right-wing way of thinking. We want you to read.
I do, but like,
we want you to know your history. We want you to know English. We want you to know math.
We want you to waterboard smug.
And if you happen to know some like detentional devices, that's fine.
But that is the incredible thing, is like actual pillars of education. When you think about like math and science, how it's been blamed by the left as being like a right-wing construct, and like standardized testing as being like a right-wing construct. Like, it is
achievement
truly horrific
itself.
That's the thing. It's
horrific. A right-wing construct.
But
anyway,
we have to fight back against that, to Holmes's point that he made earlier before the interview, is that if we are not in there making the arguments as a part of our communities, then the left just takes it and it gets worse and worse and worse.
We're going to think about this in the new year. We're going to think about the way that Ruthless can help suck in different groups that are a part of the solution. Like, we can't solve every problem, but we can help direct people to places that can.
100%.
And we're going to think about that in the new year. Anyway, I think we did it. This is a pretty fiery episode leading into Thanksgiving.
Yeah. Outstanding. I think we absolutely did it, gentlemen. Thank you again to Corey. Fantastic interview. Thank you for that message. Thank you so much to our listeners. Again, if you have not yet, there's no better time to subscribe on YouTube, especially ahead of our Thanksgiving special. So until next time, minions, keep the faith, hold the line, and own the libs. We'll see you Thursday. Stay ruthless.